This is the High Stakes Lowdown, a RotoViz podcast brought to you by the Fantasy Football Players Championship. I'm Eric Balkman from the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour and the FFPC. You can follow me on Twitter at Eric Balkman and the FFPC on Twitter at FFPC. Today I'm speaking with Matthew Capps, a top 25 finisher in this year's Football Guys Players Championship, a former FFPC main event league champ, and a winner of more than $10,000 in his high stakes career. In this special extended episode, we wrap up the 2017 season, touching on a bevy of topics including what we learned from the year, where we went wrong, how things will change for next season, and how we can be better players in 2018. Also, to kick things off in this podcast, we'll hear from 2016 FFPC main event co-champion David Hubbard, summing up his busy fantasy season defending his overall title and what he plans on doing next year. You can follow Hubbard on Twitter at 208-858-740. Before we get into the show, I want to remind everyone that you can get a listeners-only 30% discount to a RotoViz NFL pass through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. Your subscription gives you unlimited access to all of the RotoViz content and tools, and it helps support the podcast channel. Now, without further ado, let's check in with the champ, David Hubbard.
Four top 100 teams in the FFPC main event championship, Dave. Certainly not what you're hoping for as far as, you know, winning the 250 grand again, but there are a lot of players that would have loved to have what you guys had in the main event this year. What did you learn, not just from the main event this year, what did you learn from drafts and managing these teams this year that you'll actually take with you into 2018 leagues?
I probably did too many things. It just takes too much time, and the amount of time it takes is, like, overwhelming almost. I mean, I average, like, I average 14, 15 hours a day, and it was probably too much. I got a little burned out, so I'll probably cut back some on the 350s. I was fine with the main events. We just had a lot of exposure to Zeke and David Johnson, and when you do volume like we do, and that's maybe say that's 30% of your volume, and you lose those two guys, you're not winning an overall most likely. Because it's so hard to win those. Everything has to be right those last 3 weeks to win that sprint. But that's probably what I learned. I probably did too many 350s.
So with, you know, when you're putting in whatever it is, you know, 14, 15 hours a day, and now that the season-long NFL fantasy season has come to a close, what are you going to do with all this time on your hands?
I got poker season. It's time to play poker. Spend more time with than play poker. I have a group that I play with. We call ourselves Triple H, so I'll spend a lot of time sweating them and play them a little bit myself. So that's where the majority of my excess time will go to now, back to playing poker.
One of the stories to me of this season, as far as specific players go, this is a guy that I feel like I saw you drafting, you and Nelson and Austin drafting in a lot of spots this year, is DeAndre Hopkins. And I would have made the case prior to the 2016 season that he's quarterback proof, and then Brock Osweiler came along and really destroyed his value. But now this year, you know, he was catching passes from Deshaun Watson, from Tom Savage, from TJ Yates. I mean, now he really does seem quarterback proof. He gets Deshaun Watson back next season at the start of the year, you know, hopefully. How high do you think you would be drafting him in leagues next year, and where do you think he ends up going in drafts?
I think he's a no-brainer, middle of the first round guy in all drafts. The guy's a freak. I mean, and with Watson, another thing that Watson does to help DeAndre Hopkins is Watson really suits Will Fuller's skill set because he can scramble around, and Fuller does most of his work down the field. So that causes defenses to pay less attention to Hopkins. So Hopkins, as long as he doesn't get injured, is a no-brainer first rounder next year in every draft.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. He actually cost me a league this week with that beautiful toe-tapping touchdown that he had on Monday. That was, you know, I hated losing the league, but, man, that was awesome to see.
That was pretty good.
You know, to that end, Hopkins was a guy that you guys were drafting, not like really early, but definitely taking advantage of him slipping to the, you know, third round in a lot of leagues. And you guys had done a lot of leagues, it seemed like, where maybe you get one running back early, but it seemed like you were fairly receiver heavy, in a lot of drafts, especially the higher stakes ones with the FFPC. And I'm kind of curious where you guys fall on this, or where you specifically fall on this, because there was numerous mid-round, late-round waiver wire running backs that either hit for the majority of the season or at least part of the season. Guys like Alvin Kamara, Kenyon Drake, Alex Collins, Rex Burkhead, James White early on, Deion Lewis later on. Is pounding those guys again in the mid rounds a good strategy after you've already assembled a good wide receiver core and maybe a tight end? The best piece of advice that you can give to new players that are going to try the format next year for the first time?
I would give them the best case of advice I can give them, and don't be like me. I owned every one of those guys you just mentioned, and I dropped every one of those guys at multiple times in multiple leagues. That's something we got to work on. We're bad about like not giving the guys enough rope. We see the talent, and then as soon as we determine that we don't think the opportunity is like immediate, we just cut them, and then they go on somebody else's roster. So literally, every one of those guys you just named, no joke, we probably owned and dropped on 80% of our teams.
So I mean, there's a lot of volume.
Be patient with guys.
Yeah, and I mean, there's, and before we say, like, it's not like because you played so many teams, obviously you're gonna come up on, you know, dropping on a lot of these guys. It's not like you dropped them, you know, everywhere. You know what I mean? Like you held on to them in certain spots, I would imagine.
Sure.
Final question for you before I let you go today. And by the way, thanks so much for joining me every other week on the High Stakes Lowdown. I certainly appreciated it and wish nothing but the best for you in 2018, not only fantasy football, but in poker as well. Hopefully you end up crushing that again. I know you had a very successful year last year. We have the world famous FFPC Playoff Challenge coming up in basically a couple of weeks here. As the NFL playoffs will get underway, do you have any predictions on what player you think is going to stand a good chance at crushing the postseason that is going to be on that $100,000 winning lineup?
We're just starting our prep for that. I wasn't going to do the playoff challenge this year. I taught myself out. I was so burned out on football, but of course now I'm going to do at least 50 teams. So
it's going to be interesting, man.
I don't think it's going to be the funnest. Probably the funnest playoff challenge that I've ever done, because when I look at it, I can make a case for almost every team in the playoffs on both sides of the bracket. I could make a case for them getting to the Super Bowl. So I think this year, more than any other year, it's going to be wide open. And I'm not really sold on any one particular player yet. So once I start my prep, maybe I'll hone in on a few. But right now, I usually have a strategy I already have in mind about this time. How I'm going to attack the playoff challenge, but this year I don't. It's really, really wide open. I'm sure Gurley will be highly owned at way up percentage-wise, because there's not a lot of people on the Rams that can outscore him. Le'Veon Bell, if Antonio Brown don't get healthy and is able to come back, he's going to be highly, highly owned. So there's going to be a lot of guys in the 80 to 90% owned, and rightfully so. I mean, Pittsburgh Steelers might go straight to the Super Bowl, and if you don't have Bell, you're not winning a playoff challenge. So it's going to be a unique challenge this year. I'll be interested to see what roster wins that thing. So
yeah, I think
that's how I see it.
And it's hard to interrupt. I was just going to say that I think the NFC, you know, getting that, picking the right team is going to be so crucial, because you have, you know, these teams that really haven't been there before. You know, the Rams and the you know, the Eagles and the Vikings. You know, these are all teams that, you know, have significant quarterback, I don't want to say, you know, issues, because Case Keenum's obviously been crazy, but is Case Keenum able to lead the Vikings to the Super Bowl? Can Jared Goff do it? Can Nick Foles do it? And then you look at the teams with the really good quarterbacks in the NFC, you know, Cam Newton and Drew Brees and, you know, whoever makes it between Russell Wilson and Matt Ryan. These teams all have to go on the road to play those teams. So, you know, getting the NFC right is going to be crucial.
I agree 1,000%. Yep.
Well,
a lot of good defenses. So, picking the right player against those defenses is going to be crucial too.
Very crucial, and we'll be excited to see how you guys do in that. Once again, thanks so much, David, for joining me this year. I certainly appreciate it. Best of luck in the playoff challenge and at the poker table, and we'll talk to you again soon. Good luck in drafts next year.
Thanks, Walkie. I appreciate it. Holler at you later.
Thanks to David Hubbard for his input this week. Now here's $10,000 high stakes FFPC winner Matthew Capps.
Matt, when you are not playing high stakes fantasy football, tell the RotoViz listeners what you are doing for a living.
Well, I'm an actuary. Work for a local health plan here, analyzing data most of my days. As you can imagine, it's not as entertaining looking at data relating to health insurance claims as it is looking through our football fantasy guys. But I spend a lot of my days analyzing data.
And Matt, correct me if I'm wrong. You're a fellow Wisconsin guy like myself, right?
I am born and raised in Madison.
So, and are you a Packers fan as well or no?
I am. Yes, I am. This was a rough one.
This was a great year for us to be really into fantasy football rather than the Green Bay Packers.
Exactly. Oh man, it was rough. So it makes you. It's a quick reminder of what could be without a quarterback. So
yep.
We don't have a whole lot to complain about.
I always said for people, you know, because when Brett Favre came to Green Bay, I think I was, 12 or 13 years old. I was actually at Lambeau Field, the game that Don Majkowski got hurt and Favre came in. And this is back when, as a kid, you're like, oh, Majkowski, he's the guy that's bringing football back to Green Bay. And then I turned to my dad, who we were at that Bengals Packers game in Lambeau. And when Majkowski went out that ankle injury, and I said, they're going to put in this guy that they just gave up this first-round pick for, this Favre guy. We're screwed. This is it. And then sure enough, Favre doesn't, miss another game for forever, and a dynasty's born, and then Rodgers comes by. And I said, for all these people that grew up on Favre and Rodgers, myself included to a certain point, although I remember some of the bad times in the 80s, I said, it is going to be such an awakening and such a rude wake-up call when anybody but those two guys are in a quarterback. And now we saw what happened with Brett Hundley this year, and it was not good.
Yeah, I know. It's this day and age, it's probably always been that way to some extent, but people turn pretty quick. So I think you probably noticed that with your group around Wisconsin as well, how much complaining and the sky is falling stuff we heard right away. So, but I had, when that injury happened, I had a group of buddies that I went to school with in St. Louis, got together to watch games that day. So we sat down and about 5 minutes in, see Rodgers go off, just a brutal start to watching 6 hours straight of football.
I remember, not that the listeners care about this, but I'm going to say it anyway. I know it's still fresh in my mind, but the Packers are 3-1 at that point, taking on Minnesota, at their place. And
yep.
My wife was out shopping. I remember exactly what I was doing. I was flipping a pancake in the kitchen. I was making pancakes for my kids for lunch, and I had the Red Zone channel on. I didn't even have the Packers on. And I had the Red Zone channel on, and all of a sudden they're talking about an injury to Rodgers, and I looked, and as soon as I saw him hit the ground, walked off the field, I'm like, that's his collarbone, man. I mean, that's – and
yep.
I'll never forget flipping that pancake when the 2017 season came to a screeching halt. I was flipping a pancake in the kitchen. But, I'll tell you
yep.
what, as long as we're on the Packers, before we get into fantasy, this relates to fantasy. It's going to be an interesting 2018 for Green Bay, because obviously Rodgers is going to be back unless the NFL – forces the Packers to cut him after the malfeasance and skullduggery of placing him on IR a second time. But so he's going to be back. Jamal Williams and Aaron Jones will be back. I don't know. I mean, I would like to think they're going to keep Ty Montgomery at running back, but that remains to be seen as well. But you look, and Davante Adams is a free agent, so we'll have to see if they pay up to keep him. I'm curious if you think Jordy Nelson is done. Is this a guy, even if he slips, because I know he's going to slip in drafts next year, is this a guy that you have faith in putting up numbers, even with Rodgers back next year?
I mean, I do, as long as Rodgers is there. So I think we saw, he was exposed pretty badly when Rodgers was out. But they just have such a chemistry together. We've seen it over the years that that's his go-to guy. And I know Adams has turned into that a little bit, and obviously had a fantastic year and is a good player. But if Rodgers is there all year, throwing the football, throwing close to 40 touchdowns. I mean, Jordy's going to get some of that. So I think, I mean, you bring up a good point. He may become one of the value guys next year overall. So
he could be the type of guy, too, that, I mean, I never really, you know, even when he was like a younger player in the league, I never really, and I know he blew past guys in the secondary quite a bit, but I never really remembered when Jordy Nelson was in his prime, I never really thought of him as like a blow by you guy. I've always thought of him as a guy that always seems to kind of be covered, and Aaron Rodgers always seems to throw him open.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Where he did, yep. They have such a chemistry where they know what spot that ball is coming on each pattern. And I think, you know, as long as you keep that chemistry together, good things can happen. So, yeah, Jordy Nelson is going to be a compelling guy that we're going to be watching for in drafts next year. I'll tell you another.
He's good in tight areas and around the sidelines. So that in the red zone, and that's where Rodgers goes to him. So, I mean, that won't change if Rodgers is there. But to your point, yeah, he's not separating. So he's not this guy who's going to, you know, put up consistent 100-yard games, I don't think, going forward. But that touchdown element and the number of catches, I think, will still be there for him with Rodgers.
Absolutely. We're gonna be watching that. That is going to be an interesting – plus we'll have to see what Green Bay does in the draft, too, to see if they take a wide receiver, you know, in the first couple – you know, day one or day two. We'll see what happens there. Okay, 23rd place for you this year in the 2017 yep. Football Guys Players Championship. Congrats to you on that. $2,500 for that, not to mention the, you know, the money that you cashed in league play prior to the championship round. Congratulations there. Todd Gurley, obviously a big reason that squad did as well as it did. So you look at Gurley for 2018. He obviously has arrived as a fantasy stud. However, after he had that massive rookie year, took that huge step back his second year. Are we about to see a big regression next year? Because I mean, 19 touchdowns this year, that's going to be very difficult to replicate. You think of what he did the last 2 weeks of the fantasy season. He just was, I mean, just won people leagues by himself. Is there going to be a regression there? I mean, is this a top two overall pick that we're talking about for next year's drafts?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's got to be right up there. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out next year, where these top running backs go. But yeah, and maybe a little bit of a regression just because it's so hard to duplicate what he did this year. But I think it's clear if you watch a lot of football and watch him play, I mean, he is just awesome. I mean, the guy does everything. To put up the numbers he did in his rookie year on a bad team, and you know, last year I don't know off the top of my head. I don't recall a lot of what led to it, but again, playing on a terrible offense, defense was able to just focus on him. And now, when he's got some competent players around him and good coaching, it's clear what he can do. So the guy's young, he's a stud. He's everything, does everything on the field. And, even just the last week watching him, he has a play where he catches a pass. He's running a crossing route, catches a pass thrown behind him, hurdles a guy, gets hit, doesn't even go down, gets an extra 5 yards. It's like, it's just unbelievable what the guy can do on the field. So, I don't see any big drop off from him unless Goff goes down or something, or something fluky happens where they just become one of the worst teams in the league.
Yeah, and I think Sean McVay obviously had a ton to do with what Gurley was able to do in 2017 versus 2016. Let's put you on the clock for the number one pick in a draft that's happening tomorrow for next year. Are you taking Le'Veon Bell first, Todd Gurley first, or somebody else?
I would go Gurley first. I just think that, Bell is another one who's just a guy you're happy to have wherever you can get him. I just think the explosiveness of Bell, of Gurley, is a little bit too much to pass up at this point. Being a little bit younger and just watching him, he looks more explosive. You know, we haven't seen Bell break off 40, 50, 80-yard runs, catches at all this year. Totally a volume guy, which is good, and you want those guys. But, I couldn't pass up Gurley at number one, I don't think, at this point.
So Gurley, obviously, is your number one pick. Bell is still a first-round pick for you for sure. You look at how the first round might shape up next year. there's a lot of running backs that could actually go number. I mean, we haven't mentioned David Johnson yet. This is a guy that was going at the 101 in most drafts this past season, and then he gets hurt right away. You have the emergence of Alvin Kamara. You have Mark Ingram, who's been performing seemingly every week. He's a top 10 running back when it's all said and done. You have both those Saints guys. You have Kareem Hunt and how he stepped forward this year. There's been a lot of running backs that Leonard Fournette is another guy too. When he's been out there, he's been producing. There could be a lot of first round running backs next year. How many do you think go in that first round, Matt?
I mean, add in Elliott, add in McCaffrey, add in Cook. If he comes back and he's ready at preseason and shows what he showed right away. Yeah, I think it's a changing of the guard. I think next year in particular, it's going to be almost all running backs. You know, I mean, it's proven out the last few years that running backs have become more valuable, certainly more so than it was. You go three plus years back, it became really receiver and tight end dominant, and you were really unsure about loading up on running backs. But I would expect 10 in the first round, and in most the vast majority of drafts. I think you'll get Brown and Hopkins. That'll get some attention, but off the top of my head, I don't even know any other receiver tight end that would warrant first round consideration with all those running backs we just named.
Yeah, and you're gonna have Odell Beckham coming off the injury.
There you go.
Beckham's one guy. You're gonna have Julio Jones, who's obviously was picked this year as like a top 5 to 6 player, right around there, and he's been very inconsistent this year too. So you look at maybe he drops to the second round next year. And then when you throw in the whole PPR or the tight end PPR tight end premium league a format that the FFPC has, you're gonna have Rob Gronkowski, who looks like he's gonna come into the season healthy. Travis Kelce is coming off a career year. Zach Ertz might have been the tight end one this year, given his consistency. Those first two rounds this year, people always want to draft at the front. But maybe drafting in the middle or at the back end isn't necessarily that big of a disadvantage or perceived disadvantage as it has been in the past.
Right. Yeah. Because when it comes to what you said, who's your number one running back? I think you know, most people right now would look at Gurley, but then you got 5, 6 guys that you feel comfortable with right away. I think next year is going to be a really fascinating year when it comes to drafts. I think it's going to be different than what we've seen in past years. And I would say, you know, with the drafts that I had this year, it felt like it was kind of already that way, where it seemed like teams were stacking running backs a little bit more this year than what I'd recalled in the past. And, man, after the way this year played out, I would expect that to amplify next year.
You know what I saw a lot of this year, as long as we're on the subject? I saw a lot of people loading up on receiver early, okay? But for whatever reason, you know, maybe the injuries or underperformance caused people hitting the waiver wire, you know, early or, you know, often during the year. And I saw a lot of teams at the top of leaderboards this year, even if they went receiver early, I saw them starting 4 running backs a lot. A lot of times I would see... Gurley and Bell, Gurley and Hunt, stuff like that, whatever. But then I'd see Kenyon Drake in there. I'd see Alex Collins in there. Chris Thompson was in there for a good portion of the year. Obviously, Alvin Kamara was a guy you could get sometimes in a double-digit round, and he was obviously in there quite a bit. So it seemed like even though people built their teams around receivers, if they were smart and got the right guys off the waiver wire, they were loading up with 4 running backs in their starting lineup towards the end of the year and really crushing it.
Yep, exactly. And the team that you mentioned already that I had that finished up there, that was the position I was in. So I actually had Chris Thompson on that team, which was unfortunate to see him go down. But with Gurley, McCoy, Ingram, and Thompson, not only was it the best team I had, it was my favorite team because I just knew those 4 are playing and now I'll figure out the rest. You know, and so when you get in that position, you have 4 of the top 10 running backs going, that's a pretty good feeling when you're setting your lineup each week.
And necessity is the mother of invention too. I mean, a lot of players were, caught when guys like Thompson would go down, when guy like Odell Beckham went down early, David Johnson went down there, and you have to make a move if you want to be relevant. And sometimes making that move is a big risk, and it's spending a lot of money. And maybe some people spent $400 or $500 of their fab budget on Kerwin Williams and ended up kicking themselves. Well, other people did it with Kenyon Drake and loved it. Other people did it with Alex Collins and loved it. So sometimes that fear, or the fear of losing your season, causes you to bid a little bit extra and be more aggressive and get these guys. And then it works out having these guys in your starting lineup. And certainly, I don't want to compare Kenyon Drake as a perfect David Johnson replacement, but there's something to be said of the reliability that he provided down the stretch for fantasy owners this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And I tend to my approach has been in the past to be less aggressive early on in the waiver wire, and it's certainly come back to bite me at times. But we're all kind of a product of our past, and I go back to, man, I don't even know what year it was, but one of my previous best finishes was courtesy of a guy named Bryce Brown. I don't know if
Oh
you
yeah,
remember him
sure, yeah.
from Philadelphia. And so he was a guy who I had money, and I picked him up in like every league I had, and he just was awesome during the playoff stretch. And then even into to the championship week or weeks. So, I've been kind of playing off of that to where I always kind of want to wait, and not spend a bunch early. But this year I actually, on most of my teams, it was out of necessity. I was just trying to scrape the waiver wire and find guys, and unfortunately wasn't in that position to pick up guys like a Kenyon Drake at the end of the year.
Well, I mean, listen, figuring out the waiver, I've always said it's not a science, it's an art, and there is no correct way to do it, because each league is different, each year is different, each week is different, and it's so difficult to bid the correct amount and pick up the correct guys. In that to that end, when you look back on this season, what's one thing that you wish you would have done differently? That maybe late, maybe it was one player that you feel like you missed the boat on. Maybe it was a player that you invested too heavily in your leagues, or maybe it was something completely different. When you look back at this year, what's something you wish you could have taken back?
Yeah, a couple things come to mind. The first one is, and it ended up not being that bad throughout the whole year. But the week that Cook went down, I think in most of the leagues I was in, both Murray and McKinnon were available, and I went with Murray. I mean, that's who I went after. And I got him. Probably spent more in the waiver wire for one guy than I wanted to, but that was because I needed running backs in those leagues. So, and then he got off to kind of a slow start there, and that's where McKinnon was going. And to me, those were important weeks right in the heart of the season, where you're trying to make a move and get your teams into playoffs and good positioning. But what kind of dovetails from that is, I did go more receiver heavy for the most part. The league that I finished this high in was the one I went running back round one and two. And then picked up Ingram, I think in round six, which was obviously a good value and kind of where I was targeting him in drafts. But what it turned out being was that I was scraping for running backs on the waiver wire all year, and never really hit the guys I wanted in the other leagues for that. And McKinnon was one guy who I think would have really helped me had I picked him up. So.
I'm curious as to, as long as we're talking about Murray v. McKinnon, there was a lot of talk after Cook got hurt that, well, there was three schools of thought essentially. I don't know if anybody said, hey, both these guys are going to help your fantasy team. I heard plenty of, oh, Murray's the guy, McKinnon's the guy, or neither one of these guys is going to be able to do anything for your team this year. Why were you? Because for me, I was more Team McKinnon strictly for the PPR aspect. I felt that he was the more dynamic guy. He had been catching more balls, and even though I thought Murray would get goal line, I felt like McKinnon would be the better value. And initially, I think McKinnon was the choice, but then it down the stretch we saw that Murray, you know, outside of I think week 15 when McKinnon caught all those passes, Murray really was the value down the stretch. I'm curious, what drew you to Murray over McKinnon after that Cook injury?
Yeah, to me it was just it was, this might sound strange, but to me it was all about upside, and I would think that maybe on the surface you think McKinnon's the guy with the upside because he catches passes and whatnot. But I was just looking that if Murray was healthy and got hot right away, that he could take over and be the full-time back where you're just sprinkling in McKinnon. And so I was more just rolling the dice and saying I have some teams that if I get a running back that is going to be a week-to-week top 10 guy, you know, this team's going to be extremely strong. And so that's why I went Murray, is I thought he had the better chance to really, you know, get 20, 25 carries, couple touchdowns on a week-to-week basis. So,
you know, I'm definitely guilty of this. And sometimes with that PPR, the quote-unquote upside aspect of these smaller running backs, we get excited about the ceiling without, you know, with sort of ignoring the floor a little bit. When sometimes the answer is volume, which I think even McKinnon supporters would say that, yeah, Murray's probably going to touch the ball more. And we forget about how tantalizing that floor can be when you're talking about all that volume that Murray's going to get from a week-to-week basis. And the fact that he did, and then he was productive with it by and large, you know, four out of the last 5 weeks of the season, he really helped a lot of fantasy owners. And sometimes the most obvious reason of picking up a guy, volume, is the most beneficial. And we're blind to that. At least I know I'm blind to that sometimes when it comes to cases just like this.
Right. Yeah, the tricky thing with those guys who don't catch passes like that too, who aren't going to be the true go-to guys, is so, I mean, I pick him up and then I play him when he does nothing, and then he's on my bench when he has his two touchdown week. So
right.
That's, yeah. You know, I play that game.
Matt, what's the stand that you made in your drafts this year when you were, you know, building these teams, or off the waiver wire when you're, you know, fixing these teams or enhancing them, making them stronger? What's an instance of something that you really, you know, this would be a good example of you know, I'm team Latavius Murray and I'm going to get Lat Murray on my teams versus Jerick McKinnon. Is there another example of a guy that you really made a stand on that really paid off, that was the right call, that was sort of a polarizing discussion at the time?
Yeah. I don't know if either of them were really polarizing, but two guys that I ended up with a lot in a lot of areas I really liked were Sterling Shepard and Deion Lewis. Now, you know, Lewis, it took him a while for the Patriots to actually start playing him, and Shepard had some injuries here and there, so depending on how well-rounded your roster was, you could be sitting week to week with a pretty big gap. But, you know, those just – they just – to me, when I watch them, they just look like really good football players that do a lot with the opportunities they're given. And in Shepard's case, injuries helped him become more of a volume guy. But they just seem like a guy that they score touchdowns when it doesn't even feel like they're going to score a touchdown. So those, I've seen them do that, and those are two guys that I wanted, which you were either getting really late in drafts, or then even in Lewis's case, I know he was dropped in a number of leagues, or not even drafted for that matter. But
I remember, was it 2015 when Deion Lewis was like essentially a top 10 running back for the Patriots, and then he had that nasty injury and everybody kind of forgot about him, and then all of a sudden, you know, down the stretch this year, he's been great again. And Shepard is another guy. He's a great example of, look, I don't think anybody thought that both Beckham and Marshall were going to have season-ending injuries fairly early in the season. I don't know if anybody saw that coming. Certainly, you know, Marshall was getting up there in age and Beckham was just kind of a freak thing. But you have a guy like Shepard who, you know, was like a second-round pick that a lot of people said, you know, in dynasty circles, like, look, this guy might not have the highest ceiling as far as his career arc goes, but he's very polished and can contribute right away. Well, this makes perfect sense that you can draft a guy like him, you know, in the 13th, 14th, 15th round, whatever it was, and if Marshall sucks or gets hurt, which both kind of happened this year.
Yeah,
Shepard steps
exactly.
into that role right away as a starting receiver opposite Odell Beckham, and then he becomes the number one when Beckham goes down. I mean, the thing is, when you get to those double-digit rounds, you got to stop kind of looking at the opportunity, and you just got to kind of look at the talent and then hope the opportunity comes.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that. You know, I mean, another guy who probably didn't go very high in most drafts but ended up being a pretty good one too is a guy like Marvin Jones, who to me he kind of fits into that Shepherd mold of they just seem to do the most with their opportunities. And so yeah, instead of drafting struggling for a name, but you know, guys that have this extreme upside that you've never seen do it before, as opposed to taking these guys who have performed in the past, and they, for whatever reason, they don't seem like the sexiest name because they're, you don't feel that they'll really be a top 10 receiver. Or they don't have that upside. But, you know, in this format, you got a wide receiver three that you feel really comfortable with every single week. I mean, that's a luxury to have.
To a certain extent, I think you could lump Adam Thielen in here too.
He's there now. Yeah. Oh yeah.
To a lesser extent, as far as like, you know, because he actually shot up the last couple of weeks before the main event out in Vegas. He got up to like a 7th, 8th, 9th round pick, you know. But a lot of people who are drafting, you know, we have at the FFPC, we have drafts going right after the Super Bowl. I mean, he was such an afterthought. And this is a guy that had made plays before and just developed such a good chemistry with Case Keenum this year, and he really crushed it. And that's another guy that, you know, you just look at what he's been capable of doing for, you know, in the past. He really put it all together this year for sure. I'm speaking of those satellite drafts that we start after the Super Bowl is over. You did probably about a dozen plus of those this year.
Right around there.
Yeah. What information did you take that you got from doing those drafts that really helped you in not only the drafting process for the Football Guys Players Championship, but also the FFPC main event as well? What did you learn from those?
Yeah, I mean, the kind of the obvious one right off the bat is you get a good feel of where guys are going. And I find more value in it of kind of the guys that go rounds maybe 5 through 10 and seeing guys that may go in like the 5th or 6th round that fall to the 8th round, and just getting a feel for how much variance there can be draft to draft for some of those middle tier guys. You know, I mean, something I've learned from it now is this fits back into the whole Gurley talk is, I actually had him in a number of those. And so it kind of made me feel like I had loaded up on him, and you get enough teams out there and you want to try to spread your guys around a little bit and not be all in on one guy. So that's something I learned this year, is to not allow those satellite drafts to deter me from a guy. Cause you know, he's one that I was big on him coming into the year. And sort of what you see through those early drafts is, well, he's not going in the first round ever. He's going in the second round. Wow, he even falls to the third round in some of these drafts. So then you get caught up on trying to draft him where you've seen him go, as opposed to maybe the, you know, how you really want to build your team. So, to answer your question, I guess I kind of said something I learned not to do from it. But the main one that you learn from it is just where guys are going to get a feel for that. More so for the FPC, for the main event, you know, when it gets right up to it, you see guys really swing 3-4 rounds that can really go up. And then the other thing you notice is when you're playing against guys who are that skilled or have that much invested into a team, it becomes very clear that players pick the guys they want. So you may think, you want to get, and maybe this is before the Thursday night game, but you want Tyreek Hill, and you're seeing him go in the 4th, maybe even down to the late 5th round, and you want to target him there. Well, if a guy in the main event wants him, he's taking him in the 2nd or 3rd round. He's not going to hesitate. So that's where I think those satellites have less value for the main event, but a little bit more in the FPC.
You know, as long as this has been like the Todd Gurley episode, I'll bring this up, and this is something I'll share with the listeners of what I learned about, not necessarily Todd Gurley, but somebody who's been his biggest fan, I think, the last 2 years. Last year in 2016, you know, I facilitate a lot of football guys' drafts, a lot of online FFPC drafts, and then the high stakes leagues out at Planet Hollywood in Las Vegas. And you know where our highest stakes leagues are, the $10,000 high society, 5,000 big payback, and everything like that. And there, what Chad Schroeder, who's obviously regarded as one of the best season-long high stakes fantasy football players out there, 2016, he had Gurley all over the place. I mean, all over the place, just drafting him everywhere. And I looked at him like, you know, Chad is way smarter than me, but man, I don't think I could get this invested in Todd Gurley. And it did not work out. Last year, it did not. And so now, what would a lesser fantasy player say? A lesser fantasy player like me would say, I'm never drafting Todd Gurley again. That guy burned me so much. Somebody else can have him. I will never put that guy on my squad again. So what did Chad do this year? I think he drafted Gurley in even more leagues this year. And
Oh, that's, I love it.
he doubled down on it, and I'm looking at, you know, the results of a lot of our leagues. He won a couple of big paybacks. He won a couple of varsity titles. He won our off the grid title this year. He had a fantastic year. And this is the lesson that I'm gonna bring it back to, is like, don't be that guy or girl or, you know, or woman, whatever. Don't be that person that says, because of what this player did to me this previous year, there's no way I'll ever acquire them again, because it's a bad way of thinking about things. And now, as we've seen, perfect example, a guy who's had, you know, maybe more success than anyone, just takes it to a new level as far as buying into a player that really burned him the previous year. He does it this year, and it paid off huge. And that's so important, to really separate the emotions, separate the years. I mean, obviously, 16 games is a small sample size, but in the NFL, it's a season, and it's important to realize from year to year that you can't just accept that what happened last year is what's going to happen in years going forward.
Yeah, and I mean that's impressive to really stick to it and push that emotion aside, because I know I've been in similar situations where you have a guy on a down year and you just write him off, or you watch the next 2 years and bounce back to where he was at, and you don't have him on any team. And yeah, it's I think it's sometimes we overcomplicate a lot of this stuff, and there's the one thing to take away is when a guy really is one of the better players at his position and produces in fantasy, and he's consistently drafted in the first round of drafts everywhere, that if he has a down year, you can't just write him off. I mean, it's different when players get to the end of their career. And it's clear they've lost a step, but for a guy, you know, in his third year in the NFL, you know, to have been gone from, you know, clear top five pick the year before to, you know, never drafted in the first round in a single draft I saw. Looking back on it, you know, it was a mistake for everyone to let him fall like that.
And obviously, I'm just kind of picking and choosing examples here, and I'm sure that you know, anybody who's listening to this, like, oh, Balky, you're an idiot. You could bring up this guy and this guy and this guy, and that totally, you know, goes against what you're saying. But DeAndre Hopkins is a guy last year. There's probably a lot of people that wrote him off, and then he has bad quarterback play or bad quarterbacks, and you know, throwing to him this year, and he still crushes it. I think about Davante Adams a couple of years ago, when a lot of people thought that he was going to be the man when Jordy Nelson tore that ACL, and he really let a lot of people down. And now look what he's done the last couple of years. Larry Fitzgerald, if you remember a few years back when people were actually benching Fitz because he just, you know, he was putting up one catch games and two catch games. And there was a lot of people that back then, this is when he was like 30 or 31 years old or whatever it was, and people were like, well, he's done. You know, this is it. He's fallen off the cliff. He's never going to get it back. And now look what he's done the last couple of years. So I mean, there's examples every year that you gotta separate the emotion out of it. And I think if you're able to do that, Gurley, like Chad, or for this year's is a perfect example. You can really reap the benefits if it is the correct play. And I'm just trying to think of like somebody. that people would have said, oh, I'm never drafting him again, you know, based on his poor performance this year. And this is kind of a cheat. But David Johnson, I mean, we're talking about a guy that did not have an ACL or a patella tendon or an Achilles or anything that would affect his legs or feet. This is a wrist injury that, you know, I don't think is debilitating. I don't think it's going to cause him to underperform going forward. I think this is something he's going to rehab and come back. And nobody's really talking about him as far as the de facto 101, which he was last year. So maybe he's right. A guy that becomes a bargain next year too in the later first rounds. He's a guy that you know, we talk about all these running backs going, he could go after Gurley and Bell and Elliott and Hunt and Kamara. He could go after all these guys and he might end up being the best value of all of them.
Right. Yeah, totally. I mean, the other one that comes to mind right now, which, you know, I didn't have him in any of the high stakes stuff, but just in leagues around with friends is a guy like Mike Evans. So to me, sure. I think he'll be, you know, he was drafted in the first round, maybe into like the furthest I would have saw him drop in any draft was middle of the second round, which was more consistently he was going 7 through 10 pick overall in what I saw. And now, you know, anyone who owned him this year, they're not drafting him in the first round next year. I can guarantee that. And he'll be dropping probably late second, early third round last year. Looking forward and thinking the running back craze will play out the way it is. So, yeah. But in him too, it's clear. I mean, he's physically an imposing player, and I don't know what exactly happened to them this year, but I would guess there's not very many teams that own Mike Evans that made it very far. So,
well, and I'll say this about Evans too. You could have a new coach in Tampa next year. And certainly it probably will not be to the level of what Sean McVay did for the Rams, but maybe it is a younger creative offensive mind that can get the best out of the guy who was the number one overall pick in the draft a few years ago, a guy who had thrown for, you know, 4,000 plus yards, 20 plus touchdowns his first 2 years in the league, a guy who was targeting Mike Evans with regularity. Right. I think Evans led the league in targets in 2016. You have an up and coming tight end in OJ Howard. You have Chris Godwin who's flashed there. If they get a running back there worth it his salt, and you have these two offensive linemen coming back off IR, maybe this is a team that, you know, Tampa, we're all projecting them 1 year too early. The MVP talk for Winston was 1 year too early. The talk of getting to the wild card weekend and the divisional round of the Buccaneers was 1 year too early. And maybe this team is just littered with post-type sleepers. I think Evans is a perfect example of that. And you know what? There's going to be much more going forward of that. We could sit here all night and talk about that. I want to talk about a guy that really made fantasy seasons for a lot of champions this year, and that's Alvin Kamara. Why did we, you talk about letting Todd Gurley slip out of the first round, how do we let Alvin Kamara slip to the double-digit rounds in some drafts? And what do we look for in running back scouting? Maybe, you know, you can include the rookies or the incoming crop of rookies or, you know, younger running backs that are poised to take a step forward. What do we look for specifically when we look at running backs in those mid to late rounds to make sure that we don't let a Kamara mistake like that happen again?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, I mean, the reason why I did is because I was dumb enough to draft Adrian Peterson all over the place.
Me too. I got him in way too many spots, and even week two or week three, I was like, what in the hell was I thinking? You know what I mean? Like when he was still on the Saints, still this high-powered offense, and I just kind of gave up on rationalizing it that because he wasn't even getting the snaps, much less the touches anymore. But I'm with you. I drafted Peterson in like three or four leagues, and it was just so stupid. And okay, but that's what I'm saying. This is like, how do we see through the Peterson to get to the Kamara going forward?
Yeah, the thing is, I guess he showed some flashes early on, in preseason. I think he did have a couple of big runs. He showed he could catch the ball, was clearly an explosive player. I still don't think anyone who saw that could have predicted that he would be this good, that dependable. And do you recall any time you've seen two running backs on the same team finish top five?
No.
In this format?
Absolutely. In any format. I mean, like
That's just crazy.
it's
So,
insane.
yeah, and so that's where my mind was with Peterson was, and not Kamara was. I just figured that, you know, they would score a lot of points and that Peterson would steal all the goal line touchdowns from Ingram because we know Peyton used to love keeping Ingram out of the end zone as much as possible. And so I thought Peterson would pick that up and there just wouldn't be enough playing time for Kamara. But, you know, I guess the lesson learned is that at the end of the day, I mean, these coaches, if you got a good team and a good coach, the best players are eventually going to find their way on the field. And it's clear he's the best player. I mean, Ingram's still great, so it's good for them to mix him up. But you just watch the games, and Kamara jumps off the screen every time he touches the ball.
I think I said this on last week's show, that this year is the first year I ever did a true zero RB strategy in any draft, and it turned out to be pretty much my best team of any of my teams this year. And I think the strategy, it's a little bit different in the FFPC because you have the two running backs, only have to start two receivers, tight end, and then you get the dual flex, so you can build your teams a lot of different ways. But in other leagues that where you have to start three receivers, sometimes if you get that core of receivers early on and you're lucky enough to keep them healthy and they're performing, man, you can take so many shots. If you did take so many shots in the mid rounds at running backs, I mean, there was guys like Kamara, guys like Chris Thompson, guys like, maybe not Alex Collins, he was a much deeper, later round guy. Kenyon Drake, I guess in some circumstances went around there. And
Even
then
Duke Johnson, I
Duke
mean,
Johnson
he's a
is
great guy to,
well,
you know, build that strategy around.
Duke Johnson, Rex Burkhead, Deion Lewis, Mark Ingram, James White. I mean, these were all guys that had really good value at running back at certain points or the majority of the season. And so I think we look at that. And Matt, I don't think I'm saying anything crazy when I say next year it's going to happen too. I can't tell you who they are, but I know there's going to be these mid-round running backs that are going to win a lot of people leagues. Kamara is a perfect example of it this year. And I think, you and I can't sit here and pretend to know that we know who the 2018 version of Kamara is. We just know there will be well, maybe not a 2018 version of Kamara, but a 2018 version of something similar to Kamara. And if you can fire all those bullets in the mid rounds, you're going to have a much better chance at getting him on your team.
Or even, you know, the other one, it played out differently with the injury to Ware, but Hunt would have been in the same boat. I mean, but I think he would have proven out real quick that he was the best player there in KC. And, you know, he could have been drafted, you know, late middle rounds of the draft as well. So there could have doubled up and had two of them. Now, obviously, in the main event, that was pretty much done by the time he was there, so,
Well,
or by the time we got to that, but.
right, yeah, but I mean, you could if you were drafting in like May, June, July. I mean, like Spencer Ware was still going in like the fourth or fifth round, as everybody just assumed he would be the lead running back there, and Hunt was going super late. And so you could have easily. I mean, tons of people had Hunt late in those 28 round best balls that we had, and they won their league based on that. I had there was there was one guy, and I can't remember who he was on Twitter. I retweeted it, but he said he had, I think it was Bell, Gurley, Hunt, and Fournette all on the same team, but he only took fourth in his league because his two quarterbacks were Andrew Luck and Derek Carr, and then he said he was a brilliant idiot.
Yeah, that's
I mean, it's
unbelievable.
just crazy that that's the magic of best balls. Sometimes it just works out that way. So let's keep talking about these mid-round fantasy picks, because as much as I like to talk about Alvin Kamara, again bringing him up, Jamal Williams, Chris Thompson, as much as I like to talk about those guys going in the mid rounds and loading up at wide receiver in the first three rounds, people grab guys like Le'Veon Bell, Todd Gurley early, and then they try to hit on mid-round receivers. And to a certain extent, they did it with Adam Thielen. You brought him up, the other two guys up that I want to talk about, Marvin Jones and Sterling Shepard. These guys worked out too. Again, guys with talent that just needed the opportunity. Same thing with Jamal Williams, same thing with Chris Thompson, same thing with Alvin Kamara. What's your preferred method? Is it trying to fire these bullets at the mid-round running backs or fire the bullets at the mid-round receivers?
Yeah, I'm gonna take the out here and say I'm not sure because I think I used to really be on the zero RB strategy, and I love to load up on the receivers right away, but it just feels like it's changing. So, and even you look at towards the very end of the year, if you just looked at Football Guys rankings on top 10 receivers, I mean, you got guys like Goodwin in there, Juju Smith-Schuster. You may have like D.D. Westbrook in there. I mean, you got these guys are all guys you could have picked up throughout the year. So, and it just felt like the running backs were so much more solid this year. We listed off a bunch of those, and even think guys like a Melvin Gordon, Devontae Freeman, depending on what happens with Atlanta next year, if Coleman's somewhere. I mean, there just seems like so many guys that you load up on the running backs and get a couple of them. It's easier to scrape around with receivers on the waiver wire later in the year. So that's what's kind of changing my mind on it a little bit. But yeah, my past strategy has really been to try to target the running backs in the mid rounds, and in particular the guys that catch passes. Gio Bernard's another guy that I've targeted over the years, just a guy that you can plug in, and if you hit three or four of the top receivers, your team's set to put up big points week after week. But now it feels like it's changing.
Yeah, it might be. And I don't know if there's one correct answer. And honestly, you interview 100 high stakes players, you probably get 100 different answers on how to do this too. So, that's one of the things that we will just keep trying to, keep trying to perfect, and probably never get right as
Yeah,
fantasy owners.
and the other thing I would say is it depends on the draft too. I enjoy being the team that's doing the opposite of everyone else in the
Sure.
draft
Yeah.
if it's possible. So, one of the main event teams I had this year, was the first time I'd seen all these guys fall to this position. I ended up with AJ Green, Michael Thomas, Keenan Allen, and Demaryius Thomas in the first four rounds. And that's one of the first times I've ever just gone straight four receiver, like that. But I just they all felt like value where I'd seen guys drafting. Now, that team just missed out on the playoffs, because I missed on those middle tier running backs. I ended up with, the Frank Gores, Jonathan Stewart, Adrian Peterson, Darren Sproles. Those were my running backs there, and I just needed. What I just need to hit Thompson or Kamara in that draft, and at that point my team would have been really good, because I ended up with Ertz in that league as well. So it just felt like,
Wow.
in that draft, I got done with the draft and I was like, this team's winning.
Yeah,
You know how you get with that. I had Drew Brees in that league too, so I'm like, how can I? I can find two running backs somewhere at some point, but it just never worked out. So. And I
yeah,
actually had Sterling Shepard in that league as well. But then you get stuck. You got five receivers. You can't play all five of them.
and I'll tell you what, it's so difficult to pick the correct four from week to week, you know what I mean?
That's, yeah. Then that becomes a nightmare. That's where the team that I had that finished really high, it was great because I just had four running backs. I knew they were all going to play. So I just plugged those in to start the week and don't have to give it a whole lot of thought. A lot easier than trying to pick four out of five receivers and picking, leaving the wrong one on the bench every week.
This is going to sound stupid, but I have the teams that I've had that have not had good depth are the teams that invariably end up doing extremely well for me because I can't screw it up because my starting lineup is staring me in the face and there's not really too many decisions I have to make. It's tough to start the wrong guy when you don't have enough startable guys. And I'm throwing myself under the bus a little bit, but I've seen this with teams that have been, top five, top three overall in the main event in the Football Guys Players Championship. We have them on the high stakes fantasy footballer. I'll talk about your tough lineup decisions. Well, I don't really have any, or sometimes it's a
Yeah.
kicker or a defense or a quarterback
Right.
because, it's so obvious those core running back, receiver, tight ends are just staring you in the face that you can't screw those up because you just don't have the depth. And sometimes those are the best teams.
Yeah, yeah, and like you just said, you can't mess it up. That's what's the best thing about it. You're not having to decide between two similar players, and getting it wrong and inevitably just switching it out every week and getting it wrong over and over and over, because that's what I tend to do when I get in those situations.
Well, you and me both. I think we are two peas in the same pod there.
I'm really selling myself here,
No,
right? Yeah.
exactly. Yeah, listen, I don't know how they gave me this show to begin with. So, it's just one of those things. Let me say this. Two things I hate about going into week seven. Well, three things I don't like about week 17 of the NFL season. A, I it's still the NFL and it's still football, and even though I don't have any fantasy dogs or fantasy pokers in the fire, I still have to watch week 17, and it's week 17 football. It's usually not great.
Yeah.
Second thing I don't like, it's the end of the fantasy season. I want to get cranked up for 2018 right away, and I got to wait until next year, it's next September, for week one again. And the third thing I don't like, and this is the worst thing, I have all these ideas and all these things in my mind that I realized and I witnessed throughout the 2017 season, things I need to keep in mind for next year, for drafts, for waiver wire, for lineup setting. And you know what? Because I'm a human and I forget so much, by the time 2018 rolls around and I start drafting teams again, I'm going to forget so much of it, all the important stuff. What's one thing that we learned this season, Matt, that we need to keep in mind for 2018? Could be about a player, could be about a strategy. Could be about something that we saw this season, a trend, anything like that. Something that we need to really put at the forefront of our minds so that we don't forget, because it is important for next year's drafts.
Well, I think we've kind of touched on it throughout the conversation a little bit. And it's that this year is not going to repeat itself. It's not going to be the exact same year. So, we've thrown out guys like Gurley and Hopkins who were down the year before, and now they bounce back as two of the top guys. You got dependable guys who do it every single year, and then there's other guys that bounce back and forth. So, anyone who finished way lower than they were drafted this year, if they're truly one of the elite players at their position, if they've done it a few years, put up big numbers a few years ago, it's you can't just write them off. And then again, some of the guys who performed well this year, you can't just they're not going to repeat it. So simple as that, right? It changes every single year, so we don't really know. But one of the things you can do is maybe write some of this stuff down.
Yeah,
So.
no, believe me, I need to. And there's been times where I like, okay, a perfect example. I love buying proven players off bad years, and I was the biggest Eddie Lacy apologist for years. And there's I had a Google Doc that I kept of stuff of fantasy thoughts of stuff I needed to keep in mind for next year, and I wrote down, I think for 2 or 3 years in a row, Eddie Lacy's going to be a beast next year. He's going to return, excuse me. I wrote down like, stay away from Eddie Lacy. Don't draft him. There's nothing that I saw this year that's going to lead me to believe that he is going to be on the way back. And then those drafts roll around. So I'm like reviewing this, and I read that, and I'm like, that is not so nonsensical. This guy is a beast. He was hurt. He's going to come back. It's going to be a full season of him and Aaron Rodgers, and they're going to crush it. I'm totally picking Lacy. And then obviously that didn't work out. And then I said, listen, he's not showing anything. He's not getting better. The weight thing is still a problem. Don't draft him. This is, not. And then it comes to draft season. Well, Seattle paid him like a starting running back. They really like him. Pete Carroll says he wants him to play big. He's hitting his weight bonuses right now. And again, and the thing is with Eddie Lacy, the level that you had to draft him at progressively got lower and lower and lower and lower, and then became less and less and less of a risk to take a guy like Eddie Lacy. And I think this year, I coming into next year, I will have no Lacy shares anywhere, thankfully, and hopefully I've washed myself of that Eddie Lacy cologne I've been wearing for the last few years. But that's the thing, man. It's just like we can write all this stuff down and we can keep it at the forefront so we don't forget. But when it comes down to it, we actually have to put that into practice. And listen, you're a much better player than I, so I'm sure you would have no problem with it. But my bleeding heart, when it comes back to these guys, there's just certain guys I can't get away with, or I can't get away from. Hopefully, I've gotten away from Lacey. But it's one thing to put it into practice, and it's one thing to say to do it. It's another thing to actually put it into practice.
Yeah, and you know it does get tougher too year to year because we see less and less in the preseason. So, you know, it inevitably though you get influenced by all the rankings and all the hype, and guys are writing about some guy who's tearing it up in camp. But you know, and I think the if you're watching closely and you're forming really strong opinions about players, you know, guys that can catch the ball, can really catch the ball. That you can count on to do that year in and year out. I think those are your safer plays, guys to stick to, keep that. Don't buy into the hype. You know, how high were guys like Martavis Bryant, Kelvin Benjamin, Terrell Pryor? You know, all this upside, all this hype. Talk with these guys, and you know, they'd probably be the last players you'd write down that you'd say are dependable players that you can count on week in and week out to make the simple plays. So yeah, I think if you've watched a lot, formed a strong opinion, stick to it, try not to get influenced too much by the newest who's doing what in training camp, because that doesn't always translate onto the field.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up because that is a perfect example. I was so excited. I owned Martavis Bryant in one league this year, and it was a dynasty league. And I had been, you know, I traded for him after he got suspended, and I was like, well, at a minimum, he's going to come back and offer me a top 20 receiver, maybe a top 10 receiver in that offense. I was so excited for Bryant to come back. And then, you know, before he got, you know, reinstated, you know, there's this talk he's put on 20 pounds of muscle, he's rocked up, everybody is talking about. And the thing is, it's like you still need to be able to play football. There is an image on Twitter that was circulating in the preseason of Adrian Peterson, Melvin Gordon, Joe Mixon, and Ty Montgomery. They're all working out together. And I mean, these guys looked, I mean, Mixon looked huge, which, you know, it made me feel real good about drafting him this year. And obviously, we all know how that turned out. Then you had Melvin Gordon, who, I mean, his legs look like nothing. You know, I mean, they're like these little skinny, spindly things. And look at the year he had. And then you had Adrian Peterson, obviously, always looks the part. And then you had Ty Montgomery, who I thought might have looked the most physically imposing of any of them. Like this guy, you know, show this picture to anybody who doesn't know these players and tell them to point to the running back. They're going to point to Montgomery. This guy looks like the most running back of all these running backs. And then you look how that turned out. So I think you know, we call them off-season puff pieces for a reason. It's because they're puffing these players up and there's nothing really there. And I think that, and I've fallen into the trap too. And I'll be the guy on Twitter saying, this is ridiculous. Who cares? You know, this is just nonsense. It means nothing. And then, like, you know, I'll get it in the back of my mind. Well, you know, maybe there is something there. And then I'll slowly start to believe it. And that's just me being weak. But that's an important thing to keep in mind too, is you know, believe in the football players and not necessarily, you know, when's the last time we heard a guy like either put on all this weight or lose all this weight and it translated to the football field? I remember Le'Veon Bell from a couple years ago when, you know, maybe it was like the transition from, you know, his last season at Michigan State to Pittsburgh. I know that that was an instance, but I really don't remember another time of like when we looked at the end of the season, we're like, oh, good thing, blah, 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 put on all that muscle, or good thing, this guy lost all that baby fat and now he's running circles. I don't really remember that ever happening.
No, I don't either. Yeah, that's a good point. So, but that's what gets all the attention at the beginning of the year. This guy's transformed himself and he looks great in training camp. And so, and then you don't get to see it in preseason. Although I do have to say, just real quick back on your Lacey talk, one of the most joyful moments I had, kind of sickly, was watching a preseason Seattle game this year where they had first and goal from the one, and Lacy got stuffed four straight at the goal line. So,
I mean, what
we don't get to see a whole lot in preseason, but I got to see that.
I mean, that is the biggest message you can get. Like, do not draft me. First down, yeah. Do not draft me. Second down, do not draft me. Third down, do not draft me. Fourth down, why are we still talking about this? You know what I mean? It's little things like that that really can point us in the right direction if we look close enough.
Yeah, but then conversely, I mean, you got Kamara and McCaffrey who looked great in preseason if you watched any of them there too.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
I mean, the little bit you get to see, Dalvin Cook was another one who looked really good in preseason. So it's still of value there if they get on the field to see them in live action. But that's the type of stuff I would, if you're going to change opinions on from end of this year to drafting next year, it would have to be in live game action, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you, and especially with those rookies too. That's where we see, that's when this preseason means so much, and we see these guys actually go up against other NFL players rather than, you know, other ACC guys or Pac-12 guys or whoever it is. So very important. Matt, I apologize. I have kept you on for forever tonight, but this is technically the season finale of the RotoViz High Stakes Lowdown. So I don't mind going a little bit deeper and longer on the air tonight with you. This makes a lot of sense. So final question of the season, final question for you as we look forward to 2018. Not to 2018. We still got the FFPC Playoff Challenge, which is going to be a lot of fun. We have to get that out of the way before we can start drafting for next year. So the playoff challenge, which is at myffpc.com, I'm not going to really pump it up too much. You can go there and read more about it. But a player that you think is going to be a great pick for that format where, you know, you can only pick one player per team. It's a set it and forget it, no roster management. A player that you think is going to be an important player that is going to be on teams at the top of the leaderboard and a guy that you want to stay away from. If you want to win that $100,000 grand prize, who is a buy and who is a stay away from?
Well, I don't know if I should give away the secrets, but I'll say a guy that I think will be pretty sneaky this year in particular, and it'll be a little bit of a injury watch to see what's going on with other guys. But we've talked about him already. I think Deion Lewis is a guy that. You know, if White and Burkett really aren't there and healthy, and you believe the Patriots are going to make it far, which I think most people do, he's a sneaky play. And not that, you know, going with your standard Tom Brady or the top guys is a bad play, because I think people in this playoff challenge tend to try to overthink it too much and really try to say, I'm not going to have this guy because everyone will have him. I think you know, those top guys who are studs, there's a reason they're there, and the core of the team should be around that, and it's going to be those one or two offs. But he's a guy that, you know, the Patriots throwing the ball out of the backfield, if James White's not there, touchdowns, they've shown they're running the ball on the goal line all year. He's shown he can do it, and now I think it's crunch time, and he's their best running back. So kind of prime time for him. The guy I'd probably stay away from is less a product of him and more of the team is, I think Zach Ertz will be a guy who most people line up just because of the season he's had, which was great. I guess it depends if you think Philadelphia is still going to be able to do it without Wentz and get a couple games in, but I could see them going out in a game or two and, I think there's some better options to choose there.
I think the Antonio Brown injury opens up things too, as far as I don't know how many people are going to be willing to take him, given that he could miss maybe the first, that divisional game. We'll see if he can come back. And then that opens it up to Martavis Bryant, Juju Smith-Schuster, or is Le'Veon Bell, is he just the obvious guy there? Or tight end premium league, maybe you take a guy like Vance McDonald, who was catching everything in the first half, on Monday Night Football. I don't know. I
mean, right.
It opens things up. And I'll tell you this. My dark horse in this, and maybe this is my Packers fandom talking. I've seen him run the table before. I know he's on IR, and I know the Packers are technically, mathematically eliminated from the playoffs. But don't count out Aaron Rodgers marching to the Super Bowl this year.
Getting released.
Listen, until I see the Packers, until the NFL playoffs start and the Packers are not in it, I still believe in Aaron Rodgers bringing this team, you know, to the promised land. So we'll see what happens. I'm only partially kidding, and that's the sad thing.
Do you think Minnesota has a real shot at it this year?
I think anybody in the NFC does. I mean, like, yeah. And that's the other compelling thing about this playoff challenge is, like, you have, and I was talking, this is actually what I was talking with David Hubbard with about, you have pretty good quarterbacks, playoff experienced quarterbacks. You know, whether Russell Wilson or Matt Ryan get in, they've both been to Super Bowls before. Drew Brees has been to a Super Bowl. Cam Newton's been to a Super Bowl. These teams, like, feed off that energy and these guys who have done it before. Then you look at the elite teams in the NFC. It's guys that really haven't been there. Nick Foles, Jared Goff, Case Keenum, you know what I mean? But all these teams that with these great quarterbacks are going to go have to beat these other teams at their place, you know, and they certainly can do it, but will they? I mean, we have such a track record this season of the Rams, Eagles, and Vikings really crushing a lot of teams. So we'll see what happens there. But I think the NFC is wide open. David Hubbard said he believes the AFC is wide open too. I think that's more closed to Pittsburgh and New England, but the fact that I think it is probably means that, you know, it's going to be, you know, Blake Bortles right. playing in the Super Bowl against Case Keenum or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. The one other, I guess, player I'll throw out there too, what's interesting to me, this year, and I don't know if there's any seeding positioning stuff that still needs to happen in the NFC or not, but, the Minnesota defense. So
oh, yeah.
if you believe that they really are going to make a run, that's a sneaky pick there, because, you know, they'll have all home games, and if they're playing the Super Bowl at home, that defense, when they get riled up, I'm sure you've seen them plenty of times, you know, make the Packers look like they can't block anybody. So which they normally can anyways, but they make it even worse.
Right,
so,
yeah.
I've done the playoff challenge here and there. I know I had a top 10 finish, maybe even top 5 finish the year the Seahawks won the Super Bowl, and I had their defense. That was one of the anchors of my team, was their defense. So of course you would think if Seattle gets there, you want Russell Wilson or you want Baldwin or at that time Marshawn Lynch, but no, it was their defense and what they, I don't recall the specifics on it, but I think, didn't they shut out the Broncos or
I think that
safety in that game,
yeah.
The double points on defense, their defensive score was unbelievable in that Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So.
I remember that. I mean, that was just, I was just in disbelief because I really thought that, Denver was going to win that game. You know, going away 43-8 was the final of that game. Seattle won.
Okay.
So yeah, it was crazy. It is going to be a crazy, playoff challenge again this year and playoffs in general. And this was a crazy episode of the High Stakes Lowdown. Matt, so
yeah.
much thanks to you for joining me in this extended episode. We got through a lot of stuff, I feel like, for 2017 and got us ready, primed for 2018. And let's just hope that we can put it to good use and really take the next step towards to fantasy nirvana next year.
There you go.
We'll see what
yep.
happens. But thanks so much for joining the show, man.
I appreciate it. I had a great time. Thanks. Thanks to you too, Eric.
Thank you for listening to the High Stakes Lowdown, a RotoViz podcast brought to you by the Fantasy Football Players Championship. And thanks to Grapes for our theme music. Please review the podcast on iTunes under the RotoViz Radio feed. It helps us find new listeners. Contact us via email, rotovizradio@gmail.com. We'd love to hear what you think, and follow us on Twitter @RotoVizRadio. And remember, you can always support the show by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.